You are listening to the Noisy Narratives podcast, a podcast produced by the Women of First Ministries at Frisco First Baptist Church in Frisco, Texas. Here at Noisy Narratives, we like to cut through the noise of our stories and get to the heart of what really matters. We hope you are blessed by what we share. Thank you so much for listening.
And isn't it amazing?
Welcome to Noisy Narratives. This is Jemmy. I'm here with Christy.
Hello.
And we're laughing because this is like the fourth time we've tried to start this podcast. And we can't seem to get it together today.
Because we don't have an expert on.
This is it. This is it.
Somebody that's fabulous.
Yes. We have a great guest today. And he's going to share his journey, his testimony, if you want to use the Christian lingo for it. But before that, we were going to talk about something.
Well, it started because we were talking with Cindy and Rhonda in the lunchroom, break room. Lunchroom sounds like we work at a factory.
Right.
In the and talking about shows that we watch. And Debbie has never seen, you've never seen The Summer I Turned Pretty.
That's right.
So Cindy gives her like a recap of it.
A rundown, like episode or relationship by relationship kind of rundown.
Yeah, she did an excellent job. Yep. And I mean, I'm just so excited. I haven't watched the final, even though it's come out last week or 2 weeks ago. So I'm going to watch that tonight, actually, because I forgot I hadn't watched it. But Debbie was like, why would y'all watch this? This is horrible. And I'm down there just screeching with excitement. Like, it's so good. It's so fun. Team Conrad, Team Jeremiah, Billy, all the things. It's just so good. And you can't wait till the next one comes out. And you just get so caught up in it. And it's so fun. They had like parties at bars. College campuses where kids would come and watch final episodes.
That's what I mean. I'd heard of all this stuff and I hadn't watched it. And I'm asking everybody, what is the big deal?
What other responses did you have about
my response was, okay, so you're telling me, so she's with one guy about to marry him, brother. Oh, yeah, that's what, as we're talking, I think they're friends. And then all of a sudden I figure out, I'm like, wait a minute, the two guys are brothers? And they're like, yes. I'm like, how is this fun for you? Like, so are the brothers even friends by the time we're done? They're like, oh no. And I'm like, okay.
And our hearts are not broken.
So sad.
Debbie's heart broke when
my heart was sad.
She said they're brothers and they're not.
And I was like, how is this fun? Because that's what everybody explained to me, how fun it was. And that does not sound fun to me.
So what type of shows are fun? Do you enjoy watching or to escape from real life?
Yeah.
What do you enjoy watching?
So it is hard for me, I will say, because I do get too emotionally involved in things.
In shows?
In shows, which is why, you know, I have to be careful what I watch because I get nightmares and everything else. I dream about things. So I will even start a show and then I get enough in and all of a sudden I see where it's going and I'll just stop.
Because I'm like, your body brain,
I am not going to keep doing that. Right. Exactly. There's tragedy coming or whatever, and I can't do it.
Gentry is.
Yeah. I was like, nope, done.
So you just probably sit around and watch YouTube shorts all the time.
No.
I'm just kidding.
I don't do that either. Even though I do get in a really good Insta fog sometimes, I will say, with a little Instagram recipes and fun things and kid stuff and, you know, whatever. But
you gotta have a show or type
I do.
Of show.
So, Big Bang Theory.
Oh, I did not see that coming.
Yes, I have watched every single one of those. I think they're hilarious. Awesome. And then I watched How I Met Your Mother, all those with Isabella this summer.
They're all like the same youngest genre.
Oh, yeah, like nothing deep about them. You mean like that?
Like same personalities type, quirky. There's
I will say How I Met Your Mother got a little weird for me. I will say that last, we like muscled through, but honestly, it got kind of strange. But yeah, quirkiness, Friends, of course, Friends. You know, so those kind of shows. I used to watch Law and Order all the time. I do too.
But that doesn't bother your spirit?
Well, it started, I can't watch any of the others, but the regular one, all the special victim stuff, I can't watch those.
Yeah,
I try, I could not. But even Law and Order, I had to take a break from. I was like, but my big binge watching of all time is West Wing. Like, I love that show. Love it. And it's a very optimistic view of government.
Preach. Mm-hmm. Sure is. Very well said.
So I enjoy it, but it's just not reality, right? So West Wing, I love. So escapism, you brought up the word. When you're binge watching a show and you're like this escapism piece, do you get annoyed if someone interrupts your escapism?
Oh, yes. Well, I've gotten to the point where I plan it so that nobody can interrupt me. I've been very wise in how I plan my escape.
Okay.
Kid goes to school, no one kids home. I can watch all of this during that time. And then
perfect.
There's been times that I specifically remember watching a show and I went to go get Gentry from school. This was last year. And a friend was like, hey, can she come over after school? And I was like, yeah. And then I was like, dang nabbit. If you would have let me know 20 minutes ago, I wouldn't have driven up here. I could still be watching my show. Not have left the house. And I was like, oh, you're so ridiculous. And the friend is a super great friend. But in my head, I was like, you could just 20 minutes ago, I could still be on the couch watching my show. Instead, I drive up here, have all the small talk. And then you're asking if Ginger wants to come over. Which I'm not engaged because I actually want to go back and watch my show. I remember that.
That's
I was so
awesome.
Bothered by that. And I was like, you are so ridiculous, Christy. Oh, yeah. What about you? How do you respond?
Well, it depends on what it is. For me, I was always a big reader. And so when my kids were growing up, so my escaping was actually reading. It wasn't TV. And I would have to work really hard to put my books away around them. So my equivalent, right, of like what people would have done with Instagram or whatever. And then I would have had to work to not being really annoyed when they woke up from their naps because I was in a good part. Be like, man, you couldn't have taken a longer nap. Seriously, your diaper's dirty. What are you pooping for? Like, really?
You should be a morning pooper, not an afternoon pooper. Joel, let's go.
Yeah. And so it's, yeah. So anyway.
So we get bothered when people interrupt our escapism.
For certain, yes. And, but I had to like work towards not being bothered, like I guess would be my... I would think about myself. I'm like, that is really selfish. Like, what is that about me that I'm like, I'd rather be reading this book than taking care of, you know, my children.
That's okay. You've clearly worked through it. So you're doing great.
Well, and that was kind of the word we had talked about was like escapism, like what we do to escape reality. And the definition of escapism is the habit of avoiding reality and seeking distraction or relief from stress through activities or fantasy. Sometimes it can be a healthy coping mechanism, they said, when done in moderation. Providing a mental break and improving well-being through hobbies, like reading, that was, you know, or travel. But if you do it too much, not in moderation, it becomes unhealthy. It leads to neglect of responsibilities, isolation, or harmful behaviors like substance abuse. So our interview today is with John Rosenbaum, who is a member of our church, and he is sharing his testimony. But a lot of it is honestly for him was a lot of escapism in ways that were really harmful and difficult. And so we kind of laugh at our ways of escaping, but there, but for the grace of God go I, do we not end up in other forms that are truly unhealthy? And I think we all at some point need to check ourselves.
Oh, yes.
Like, you know, what are you doing that's dysfunctional or unhealthy because you don't want to deal with kind of life?
Yeah.
Right? Life stuff.
Like, I can see how, like, people binge watch shows, but then you got to watch how far does your shows go? Like, how nasty, how gory, how inappropriate do they get? And I've had that where I'm like, oh, I got to fast forward through this. This is too much, you know, messing around. This is too much, whatever. So I get, yes, 100%.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. But he has his story, though, the way he talks about it and his life is sweet.
It's not a story of him growing up. It's a story of like him being a grown adult and his actions as a grown adult, which we don't hear a lot about, which is what I found refreshing.
And his honesty and willingness to say, you know, I'm a mess, but I was a real mess.
Right. Yes.
I'm an improved mess, like we all are, hopefully, at some point. So we're really thankful he was willing to sit and talk to us and share that piece of himself, because it's hard to come on and share your story with everybody sometimes. So we appreciate that really much that he's willing to do that. Yeah. Thank you, John. So here's the interview. Okay. We are here with our guest that Christy is going to introduce. I feel like this is going to be a good one.
This is going to be so good.
We say that every time, but we really mean it.
It's going to be the best. It is. It's going to be the best. It's going to be the best because your name came from a friend that I was talking to. And I always send a note out to life groups. Like, if you have somebody that has an interesting story, will you please share with me? Because we would like to have them on the podcast. And he was like, oh, I've got one for you. And then I was like, oh, do you think he's going to share his story? And he was like, yes, I think he will. So this is Mr. John Rosenbaum. He's married to Kristen. He's been here 15 years. You're in the Hayes Life Group.
Yeah.
You are a sports family. You've got two sets of twins, eighth grade boys and 10th grade boy and girl.
Yes. Reedy and Pioneer Heritage.
Reedy and Pioneer Heritage. Yeah. See, adding that to the intro. Thank you
You're
for that.
Welcome. That's what I'm here for.
So thank you for being here. You have, did you go to SMU?
I did. Yeah. 98 to 03 on the 5-year plan.
Yeah.
So that first year was hard.
Well, he's got a shirt on that has ponies that are red and Texas that are blue. That I thought it looks like an SMU.
Rollback brand.
I didn't even pick up on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome for me noticing. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, one of us have
to notice the details.
I was
going to
be on a podcast with no video, so I stood in front of the mirror for hours trying to figure out which polo to wear.
Pick the right one. So you did great. So yeah, you must have grown up in the area, I'm assuming. Or
yeah,
no?
It was my family moved to the suburbs of Dallas when I was about one, so 1980.
Okay.
But yeah, grew up here, Louisville Independent School District, and ended up going to SMU.
Very cool.
Yeah, didn't fall too far from the tree.
Yeah, that's true. We're grateful that y'all are here. Well, this is an exciting podcast because Debbie and I actually don't even really know your story.
Well, good.
So we're
know
walking
your family. We had your kids come through First Kid. So you've been here since 2010, you said.
Yeah.
That's the year I came on staff.
Well, that's
So all four
in
of your
2010
kids
you
in
did?
2010.
Okay.
We were here a few years before that, but all four of your kids came through First Kids. Amazing.
Yeah.
So fun.
I was walking in with Addison yesterday and I was like, you were back in that room as an infant in a little carrier.
Oh, and, fun memories.
And the priest, yeah. I know.
Yes, all the way back
it's
in the
so
corner.
Sweet. Yes.
With the sweet ladies who've been in the rocking chairs.
They're still there.
Yeah. Same ones.
Miss Barbara.
Yeah. Yes. So fun. Anyway, so you've been here for a while. We've loved on your family a lot.
Yep.
But we don't know. Christy was saying, hey, do you know John's testimony? And I was like, I don't think I know it very well at all. Because then you catch yourself going, surely I know, you know, after you've known someone for that long. And then you just realize, which is why we do this podcast, there's so many people here that we know them like current.
Yeah.
But maybe we don't get the opportunity.
Yeah.
To hear their testimony from before we knew them.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad you're here too.
I think testimony is a funny word because for some reason when I hear that, I'm like, oh, that has to be packaged up into something small and deliverable.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's a messy story with lots of ups and downs and good things and bad things and good things again.
You just get to start wherever you want to start and clue us in.
Yeah, there's a few. The story kind of can come out from a few different directions. We were talking about how long we've been at the church, so I feel like that's a good place to start. Kristen and I, when we met at work, and in 2004 we started dating, got married in 2007, kids came in 2010, and our marriage and life and things like that. I mean, when we first started dating, we worked together. It was happy hours. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a God honoring dating relationship. Let's just put it that way. And then the kids came along and we were, we had both met Jesus in our teens, but had probably spent our 20s, far away,
mm-hmm.
Not moving towards God. And so the kids are coming. And I'm addicted to alcohol. I'm addicted to cocaine. And we're trying to, like, we know that we're not going to be able to do this. And so we start looking for a church home.
I feel like we need to spend more time on the words addicted to alcohol and addicted to cocaine.
Yeah.
Can we camp out there for a minute?
Yeah.
How did you get addicted to cocaine? How did you get addicted to alcohol?
I love my parents very much, and so they did their absolute best raising me, and they loved me with all their hearts and soul. And they paid for SMU, a lot of good things to thank them for. But growing up, my dad struggled with alcohol and gambling addictions, and womanizing to the point it impacted our family. I actually, during middle school and high school, I just kind of wanted to get out of the house and got involved in a youth group at that point.
Okay.
And so that's where I met Jesus. But graduating high school and going into college, there really wasn't a bridge from youth group to you're now kind of out on your own, living in downtown Dallas, going to Southern Methodist University.
Mm-hmm.
And so alcohol in college is, you know, that's how things are done. You know, if I look way back, it's like, I don't think I ever really knew how to have a relationship with somebody without alcohol
without
being
alcohol.
Involved.
Yeah.
And so that became a big crutch in college. Mm-hmm. You know, a little deeper into college, got into some dating relationships where drugs were something that came up. And so mm-hmm. at that point, you know, started having a reliable drug dealer in the Dallas area. Mm-hmm. And every time I drink, what a great idea. Yeah.
You should do drugs.
You should do cocaine.
Yeah.
Like, you should you do, know.
Not smoke a cigarette, but let's just jump to cocaine.
Yeah. You know what? I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. Isn't that funny?
No way.
Yeah. but yeah, let's do cocaine.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was funny during college, I probably experimented with everything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, LSD, ecstasy was, you know, really popular.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
You can take this out if you don't like this question. But is there an element of money and affluence involved with your ability to buy cocaine?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not a cheap drug. You know, stereotypically, you'd be like, oh, SMU, uh-huh. affluence, cocaine. It was actually friends who didn't go to SMU because I went to school around here, high school around here. It was actually getting into some of the friends that were still living in the area.
Yeah.
Not going to SMU is actually how I got into that stuff.
And so this is what I find curious, and I know that dealers have a way of finding students who are interested in drugs.
Yeah.
But I mean,
John's eyebrows are up and slightly grinning right now.
Yeah. Like, I mean, how do those connections happen? Typically,
you know, like I said,
like I'm sure there's parents listening going, I want to know how that connection happens.
Well,
right.
Mine wasn't like some drug dealer was searching us out or something like that. I just had friends that were in the service industry and bartenders and things like that. And somehow in the culture of that industry, that's kind of where it came up.
Can I tell you, won't let my kids wait tables for that reason. Because I worked at a restaurant in Plano.
Yeah.
And I saw drugs coming in and out of that kitchen all the time. And I'm like, you can do so many other things, but you cannot wait tables. And they are like, why? And I'm like, because I am I'm a mess, and I'm totally like not being very nice to the service industry, but I saw it too much and I don't trust it.
Well, and remember, I'm living on Mockingbird Lane. My friends are working at bars on Greenville Avenue.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's happening down there.
It's happening down there.
Totally.
And
so then you just have to know someone who knows someone.
Which
and
is not far away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which that connection's pretty close. It's not like you're seven places
And it
places
doesn't mean
removed.
That everybody that works at a bar or restaurant is doing drugs, but they're probably like, but that guy over there is and he knows a guy.
Okay. Were you nervous to take your first hit of cocaine?
Man, I the first time I ever did drugs was my best friend growing up, his brother was a promoter for raves.
No, oh, yeah.
And so, me and my best friend would work security at these raves, because we were not into anything at all. And so we were very trustworthy.
Yeah. So this was college?
This was college, early college.
Okay. Yep. You're working security raves, early college.
Yep.
And you're not into anything. So you're like, okay, that means you won't steal from us. You
that's
won't
right.
try to do, you won't deal, be high. Deal drugs at the
and,
door.
And I would take drugs away from people and flush them or give them to the cop that's there or whatever.
Okay.
And,
so interesting.
But there was a girl that I liked. Mm-hmm. And she happened to be a little bit more into drugs. And she was just like, one time we were at a rave and she's like, here, open your mouth. And and I knew she was putting drugs in my mouth. It's not like, oh, I'm like a victim here. I was like, yeah, you know what? Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And it was ecstasy. And that kind of opened the door to, I was like, oh my gosh, my life is ruined. I've done drugs. I'm a horrible person now. Oh. And I started doing a bunch of research around how do drugs interact with the body and all these sorts of things. And that actually, I think that led to this period of experimentation.
Because you already feel bad about yourself. Is that why? Is that what you're saying?
No,
like, I'm already a horrible person?
I think I felt bad about myself. And then I did a bunch of research to sort of get, you know, what is it actually doing to your body? And kind of like, and like almost like took more of a
scientific
intellectual approach to it.
Okay.
And it's not, you know.
Yeah.
Like I can try some things without dying.
Yeah. Like, what did this actually do to me? Am I going to die? Oh, no, it did this. It did that.
So you were never scared. You never had an episode where you were like, that was scary. That went too far.
Plenty of those episodes. It just happened post-college.
Okay.
So I ended up adding a major, getting two majors in college and a minor. And that's also when my drug use started. But at that point, it was, I don't know. It didn't keep me from getting good grades and finishing school,
performing,
and getting a job and performing. What happened is over time, I got, instead of it being recreational or something like that, it became habitual.
So it became a need at some point in college to where your brain actually functioned better with it.
After college.
I mean, in the workplace.
In the workplace. Okay. At first it was only on the weekends. But then every time I drank, I would have this urge to indulge in cocaine as well. And so it got to a point, I feel like I'm about to quote, like, you know, I feel like I'm about to quote something from AA, but it got to the point where it was unmanageable.
Yeah.
And it, I have so many stories of how it was unmanageable.
Give us one.
Well, I think the hardest moment, I want to kind of take it in a few different directions. One was, like, I knew I had a problem. Kristen, God love her, knew I had a problem, right? And our marriage was getting really strained. I think it really came to a breaking point when she was pregnant with the second set of twins. I think at this point we're here attending this church, and we were saving up money for the kids. They had like their own Wells Fargo savings account, but then I was going back behind and pulling money out of that account because nobody ever looked at that balance because we're just putting money in there. And at a certain point for the second set of twins, she wanted to pull some money out to buy something, and there's no money in it. This is probably 2011 when the second set was born. I don't remember if she gave me an ultimatum, but she was done.
Yeah.
Like this was it. And this is an interesting part of the story because this is the first time I got sober. So at this point you say you all don't remember the story or know my story. So this will be interesting for me to share. I ended up doing an online Bible study that was called like New Wine or something like this. And it was a really great 30-day Bible study. They partner you up with a mentor. You answer questions every day. You do prayer, Bible study. And that mentor responds to kind of some of your stuff. So it's almost like you have a sponsor kind of online looking at these things. Also, at the same time, one of the reasons we got plugged in here at this church was there was an AA group that met in one of the houses over here. And so I was going to that AA group. And then there was a gentleman that worked here. His name was Jeff Larson, who helped start Celebrate Recovery here. And just his heart for people that were hurting, he just made me feel so welcome.
I remember that. Y'all were good friends.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I remember y'all.
He was our life group leader.
Yeah. Okay.
And actually,
this is coming back a little bit.
Yeah, actually, sorry to weave in a few different directions. I want to go back to why we started at this church because it's a really powerful story for me. There was a gentleman that used to come here named Rick Murphy. Do you remember Rick?
Cowboy hat. Yeah.
Would plug his cell phone in at the back. Yeah. He lived in a shed here on campus a little bit.
That's right.
So the very first we're visiting, this is our 11th church to visit, and Kristen had grown up in a First Baptist church, and she's like, I really don't want to attend a First Baptist church again. I feel like you can't be real. You got to wear a mask. And we were like, well, we've visited 10 other churches. Let's just give it a try.
And her parents go here, by the way.
They do. Yeah. Because of us.
Yes. Yeah.
Her parents go here now and we're very happy here.
Yeah.
But we had walked in the front door. As soon as I walked in the door, Rick Murphy walks up to me, puts his hand on me, and goes, you look like the same age as some people that meet over here on Wednesday mornings and do a Bible study. And he goes, you should come. And I'm like, okay. And it was just a morning Bible study that like Jeff had and some other guys led that was just a morning Bible study. But Rick, you want to talk about somebody who was addicted, like Rick couldn't keep a job, couldn't keep a home. But because of him, we got plugged into this church. It was the first church we had visited in Frisco where it was just like, we walked in the door and somebody's like, this is where you belong.
Yeah.
And Rick, you know, he's dead now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he passed away. Pretty sure drugs were involved in that.
Well, and he had to go to jail for a little while for some things. I mean, and a lot of people, the church stood by him. He stole from the church and stuff like that. I mean, but again, to your point, what I think is amazing is God can use anyone.
That's my point. Years later, back in the back. He's drinking his coffee, charging his phone in the corner. And I went and sat next to him. And he could draw. And so I'm here with all my kids, all four kids to the left. He draws him a picture and sends it over to me. And I leaned over to him and said, "Hey, do you know we're here because of you?" No. Like, the day you stopped us when we walked into this church, you changed all of their lives.
That's right.
They are going to know Jesus because of you. And we both just sat there in the pews that Sunday as Chuck's talking, just crying.
Yeah.
And your point is absolutely right. Yeah. Like, did he have it all together? Did he do everything right? Yeah. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Did God use him to transform generations? Yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this was my first round of sobriety, and this is, you know, 2011, 2012. I think it's 3 years. Kristen says it's 6 weeks. We'll let that one go. And this is one of the things that's really hard for me, because I actually got up. Kristen did a tea and testimony at that
Mom
point.
Go or Mops?
Yeah, Mops. And she still has the testimony, talking about, you know, one, my sobriety, but even more, her getting over her anger towards me. And she even, you know, God had put it on her heart that at a certain point, her anger was damaging our marriage as much as my addictions. Mm-hmm. And so
I just want to stop for a minute and say, that's amazing for her to understand that even in response, our response to being hurt by others can be sin as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's a way God's calling us to respond to people in their sin and actions. And I feel like, I mean, that speaking of that, we don't talk about that very much.
No. Justified anger is not always sinless.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And I even, the church asked me to get up in front, and I sat next to Chuck and did a testimony and talked about my sobriety and addictions to alcohol and cocaine. Matter of fact, before that, it was like Buddy and Ruth, Kristen's parents. It's like, "Hey, I know you all are going to church here now. You're about to find out something you don't know."
Mm.
And so
that was your first time to tell them. That was the first time to tell them.
Wow. Yeah. Whether it was at work or family, like, I was pretty good at, you know,
covert addict. Is that what it is?
I don't know, but I was just good at hiding it.
Yeah.
And,
you functioned well,
keeping a job
in the middle of it. Yeah.
Coming to church and, you know, and doing those sorts of things. I think the part of the story that, you know, you think it ends there, right? Oh man, up in front of the church, giving your testimony, and like, you must have it all together now.
Mm-hmm. Satan's still coming after you.
Satan's still coming after.
Yeah. And your family.
Yep. And my family.
And I feel like I'm coming to church because I mean what I feel and do when I'm here.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not lying about the fact I love the Lord. I'm not lying about the fact I love my family.
Oh,
I'm not lying about the fact I want to study the Bible and I want my life to be different. Yeah. That's not a lie.
Yeah.
This is just something that I'm carrying with me that is just hard to kick, right?
Am I saying that correctly? If you've never really struggled with, I would say, an addiction or a really bad habitual sin, I'd like to think of it more of, and you've tried to stop that, you don't know. Kristen was so often, just stop.
Yeah. Yes.
"Oh, I love you. Just quit. Just stop drinking. Yeah. Well, I love you all." "No, you don't love us or you would quit." And I'm like, both are true.
Yeah.
I get it, right? Like, from her perspective, it's like, you would just stop.
Well, and it's interesting because now at this point, older, I get, you know, you get it more, whatever. But I think of things like now, like I'm having to give up sugar health-wise. It's literally almost impossible for me.
Yeah.
And so then you go, all right, that's sugar.
Yeah.
An acceptable addiction, yes. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Think about people on drugs like that.
Yeah.
And I'm going, multiply it by a 10, 20,000, whatever.
Yeah.
But if all of us would just take the one little thing that we can't quit.
Yeah.
Can't kick.
That we can't kick. And multiply it and feel some empathy for the people struggling with addiction, I think it would be helpful.
My favorite quote from Jeff Larson, he's up in front of the congregation. He's like, "We're starting Celebrate Recovery." He's like, "If you're struggling with alcohol, come to Celebrate Recovery. Mm-hmm. If you're struggling with cocaine, come to Celebrate Recovery. You're struggling with gambling, come. Porn. Anger, come. Porn, come. Pride, shopping,
come. That's right.
If you're not struggling with anything, come because you're struggling with pride.
Exactly. And, pride is your issue.
And there, you know, there's the body language of the congregation when he said that, right?
Yeah, that's good.
Everybody in here should be coming to celebrate recovery and working on something.
That's right. Yeah.
So I think the hardest part of my story is like I wish it ended there and everything was great and our family was happy.
You wish it ended with you being on stage with Chuck, sharing your testimony.
And his first time, the first time to get sober and done. It only took one time and he's done.
Yeah.
But clearly that's not.
That's not how it worked. I'm sure there are lots of alcoholics who listen to this and be like, yeah, heard that one before. It's like, okay, I've been sober for a few years. I can start drinking again. Like I can sit, I can have a glass of wine with my wife at dinner.
Exactly.
I can have a glass of wine with my wife at dinner. I can, you know.
That's what Dax Shepherd always says. Once an addict, always an addict.
Yeah.
You can never do it.
Yeah. And I remember. And so, you know, 2014 or 15, I don't really know when, just started drinking again. And you know what? For a while, it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess maybe I drank too much and was like, I need to go find a drug dealer again.
Yeah.
And I knew the bars to go walk around and mm-hmm. what to look for, you know, from a drug dealer. And so started using cocaine again. And
how old are the kids?
You know, by this point, they're probably 5 or 6.
Is Kristen knowing that you're using again the second time around? Like, how is that? If you're having to go to a bar, are you doing that after work?
Yeah, you know, she knew home? I was drinking again. Mm-hmm. She was like, okay, yeah, like, okay. You know.
We can. It seems like you're handling this okay.
Seems like you're handling this
She's
okay.
also managing 4 kids at the same time.
Yeah.
So you're not like the first person that she's like focused on. Like, she's keeping alive 4 kids. And then if she can see you, like, you showed up, you did what you were supposed to do. Well, he's fine.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I would think there's a bit of that because that's hard. But I'm sure in the back of her head, she's got to be going, oh gosh, I hope not.
Yeah. And so, you know, the alcohol just grows again to, you know, all of the signs, drinking in the morning, hiding it, all these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that just continued to grow and grow.
Did your body need it every day to function?
You know, I don't think so. I really think it was mental.
Okay.
It was really,
the second time around.
The first time around, I never got the shakes or
that's
anything
what your
like
body
that.
Didn't respond if you didn't have a drink.
No.
Okay.
But my mind was completely dependent on it.
Mm.
Did you quit the first time? Did you go cold turkey?
I went cold turkey. It was during that Bible study, that little 30-day new wine online Bible
And you didn't
Bible
get the
study.
Shakes or mm-hmm. heart palpitations?
No,
or
no that's common. There's people that don't, and there's people that do.
Yeah, not that I recall.
But after that many years, I guess, is why I'm surprised.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
I mean, but I would say my level of drinking, even though I'm sitting here talking about I'm an alcoholic and I was doing these bad things, my level of drinking wasn't socially unacceptable.
You weren't a lazy, crazy, wild drunk.
Yeah, I was not. And and my drinking in the, you know, if I'm drinking in the morning or something like that, it wasn't every day to get my day going and stuff like that.
Okay.
It was, you know.
But even the cocaine, you didn't have physical responses to quitting?
No. But, you know, and I never did that on its own. It was always a result of I'm drunk. What a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, alcohol's great at lowering your inhibitions.
You
know. I don't think I ever looked at porn unless I was drunk.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's like alcohol
drug to other things.
Yeah. It seemed to really lower my inhibitions and make a lot of other things seem okay.
So that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, fast forward, this alcohol is escalating. And 2019, I'm on the tollway after a 6-pack of beer going 90. And our wonderful state trooper pulled me over. I called him officer a bunch of times, and Kristen's like, he's a trooper. He's not an officer. Pulled me over, and it was the first time I'd been pulled over for drinking and driving. And this is right before COVID. I go back to a memory I had. When I was really struggling, I remember Kristen calling my dad and being like, John, this is, you know, the first time I got sober. John, you need to, I'm going to leave him if he doesn't turn it around. And I remember my dad taking me to lunch. At this point, my dad had stopped drinking when I was 17 or 18 and cold turkey. And I remember him sitting me down at lunch, and he had written down the names of all of these men who were Rosenbaums. And he goes, you know what all these men have in common? And I go, what? He goes, none of them drink anymore.
Oh.
And he goes, you just need to ask yourself if you want your name to be on that list. Because there's no, you know, there's no other Rosenbaum on here that can drink.
Yeah.
And I was like,
That's powerful.
Yeah, it was pretty powerful. My dad grew up in, or his drinking was in the 80s or 90s. I think he had 4 or 5 DWIs. I don't think you can get away with that anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But so I got arrested.
Did she have to pick you up? Or did you call? Was she your first phone call, or did you try to find somebody else?
No, she was the first phone call. This was probably midnight or one. The trooper was very kind. He's like, you know, we're sitting there. He's like, would you like to call your wife to come pick up your car so we don't have to have it towed? And it's like, sure. Mm. So called her. And wonderful. You're wonderful, Kristen. Wonderful woman. she came and got the car, and he took me to, as I declined to do any field sobriety or breathalyzer, so they took me to Parkland to pull my blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then ended up being locked up in the Dallas County jail. Mm. It was, I guess there's not a judge in the middle of the night, and so it was there until
I'd like to make you sit and sober up.
Yeah, it was there until the next day. They got sobered up pretty quick after go and get my blood pulled at Parkland and stuff like that. Like it's
Parkland's rough.
Yeah.
It's very rough.
And so so through that situation, this is where I think God that I got that DWI. Because it was like a wake up call, a second wake up call, a third wake up call. I don't know. He's probably like, how many do I need to give you, John? But it was another wake up call. I had to have a breathalyzer in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And which was hard from a humility standpoint, because we carpool, we have lots of kids, we're going to sports. I remember talking to parents. I was like, hey, I'm going to drive your kid to soccer. Let you know there's a breathalyzer in my car. I knew there was something that kept popping into my heart and mind through all of it. Because also, remember, I got arrested right before COVID. And so they pushed the case off for a long time.
Mm.
Then I never had to go to court. It was all over Zoom. Mm. I got deferred adjudication and probation for 6 months. And there were several people I talked to. It's like 6 months is unheard of.
That's right.
And so the whole time I'm like, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Mm-hmm. Thank you, God. And then as part of the deferred adjudication, the probation, I had to have a breathalyzer. I'm like, hey, I'm just done hiding this. I'm done drinking. I struggle with alcohol. There's a breathalyzer in my car.
Yeah.
And just that's telling amazing. People about it.
Yeah.
There's somebody a long time ago that taught me that pulling it into the light and shining a that's light right. on it is the fastest way to get through it.
That's right.
My advice that's to amazing. Anybody struggling with a habitual awesome. Sin is don't hide it.
That's right. Get out of the dark.
Pull it out of the dark. Uh-huh. Find somebody to talk to. Go to Celebrate Recovery and sit in a circle and share it with other people. Mm-hmm. Nobody there is going to judge you. Share it with your small group mm-hmm. that you're struggling and what you're going through. You know, the Hayes small group that we mm-hmm. have, you know, it's funny. It's not for everybody. Our group might, if you want to come in a very structured lesson every Sunday, this might not be the right group. Because if somebody's like, I'm struggling with something, we'll just stop everything and talk about that for an hour.
I love it.
And to me, that's what we're here for, each other. Like,
the church is hospital
for broken people.
That's right.
Yeah, not a museum for perfect people.
Nope, that's right.
I thank God that I'm, you know, I still remember the stain on the floor in the garage of me like hiding alcohol and throwing up while I'm trying to drink a warm beer, hiding drugs in the house while I have kids there and things like that. I'm just so happy that that's gone and in the past. And I thank God for the DWI. I thank God for the breathalyzer in the car. I thank God for humbling me and I guess for the strength of not hiding that those bad things were going on.
Yeah.
So have you been clean and sober since then?
Yay.
That was it?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So 2020.
That's awesome.
So,
but I do have a question.
Yeah.
Kristen picked you up from the Dallas County jail?
No, I lifted home.
That was probably a smart move.
Yeah.
Did like, she say she's not coming?
Yeah. She said, get an Uber.
Good for her.
Yeah.
I love that. Good for her. Absolutely. That's right. That's how she should handle
you know,
that.
I forgot about that.
Well, she had four kids at home.
Yeah.
I don't care. Some people would find somebody to come watch the kids and go and help the husband when it time, or the user, I'm not going to say husband, but the user, and it needs to be like, you did this. you figure it out.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, I'm done wrapping myself in this.
Yeah.
Enabling that.
I remember the day I came home from getting out of jail was also, this is a different story, but I'm sitting there. Kristen's really upset. I still smell like jail.
Yeah.
And I got a call from my mom, and my dad had overdosed on drugs or painkillers. So even my dad, who was sober, he tried to take his life with prescription medication. And so I had to go that day, shower, and go to the emergency room and be with my mom and my dad. And I remember Kristen, she's like, before you come home, find a therapist because you need help. And so I got on psychology. Yeah, I think I just Googled therapist, you know, in Frisco. That's another piece of advice to folks. Like, I started going and seeing, it was a gentleman named Paul at Intentional Counseling, a Christian
Paul
therapist.
Myers. Yeah. I recommend him all the time.
Fabulous.
He's fabulous.
Yeah. So I started seeing him a couple times a week, going and seeing him. Cause I was working through both my dad, the stuff that he had gone through, some of the things I'd gone through in my past, my continued struggles with alcohol and addiction. So I think there's sort of a culmination of things. I'm a little older and wiser. The DWI, my dad's struggles and therapy kind of helped. The current path and trajectory I'm on right now is feeling good. I will never anymore in my life say, well, I got that beat.
Well, and you're keeping in the light in multiple different places.
Yeah.
Sitting in different places, your wife knowing. But you seem really open with your kids.
They, as a matter of fact, Weston has ADHD. He went and saw Paul. I was like, I got this great therapist. You're struggling with some stuff. Why don't you go see Paul? And so back to the pulling it into the light, like being able to share these struggles that I've had with my kids will hopefully give them a foundation where they don't have to go through the same struggles too. Because we all want our kids to not struggle with the things we struggled with.
Yeah.
Well, and I know people, not everybody agrees with the whole DNA piece of things. I don't know. I feel like the science is pretty clear at this point. But when you have a whole family of Rosenbaums and you're saying, hey, this, you know, there's something here that just, you know, with Sim beat everything in the world, this is what our family's going to struggle with.
Yeah.
So I need you as my kids to know and understand that.
Yeah.
And be aware that, you know, this is going to be a problem potentially for you. So you just need to think about that before you take a drink.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, before
we've got a good
you...
friend that did that. His dad passed away. He's our age. I probably shouldn't say his name, but he's our age. And his dad passed away from alcohol. He was sober. He was a drunk for 20 years, got sober, decided to drink within the year, and his whole body shut down because it was toxins, because his body had healed, and it was toxins back in, so killed him.
Yeah.
But the boy still to this day won't drink because the openness and the open conversations that they have.
Yeah.
They might at one point, but they all know, this I bet if I have one, family. I'm not going to be able to stop.
Yeah.
And what does that look like? I thought that's so refreshing, though, because we didn't grow up with that at all. It's like you don't talk about it, you sweep it under the rug, you don't acknowledge it.
I one of the things that just popped into my head that I try to share with the kids and that I've shared with a small group, when I was that first time I got sober and I was doing that Bible study, one of the questions that was asked was, why do you want to be sober? And I was like, well, I want to be a better father than my father was. I want to be a good husband. And I remember the mentor writing back and saying, hey, that's really noble, but those are all the wrong reasons. What if your wife left you? What if, God forbid, one of your kids was, you know, life was over? Then why do you want to be sober? And I was like, he's like, you need to do it for God. You need to be sober for God.
Yeah.
Because he has a plan for you and he doesn't want you like this. And that really helped because as a needy person like me, when I'm like, hey, I've been sober for 4 days, Kristen, pat me on the back. And she's like, give me a break, and walks on by. You know, I'm like, if I'm doing it for her and I'm basing all of this on her approval or my kids' approval, they're human beings too. That's putting a lot of weight.
And they're going to mess up.
Yep. And that's putting a lot of weight on them. If I can do it and look to God and be like, hey, I'm making you happy, God.
That's right.
Then that helped. That was a foundation that really made a difference.
Oh, that's so good.
I want to read some Bible verses that talk about just light. Because we haven't really said, Actually, this is very biblical to put things in the light. But just a quick remember, just to remind us that Jesus said again and spoke to them, I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life, which goes back to your point of like living for Jesus and not being in the darkness. He who follows me will not walk in darkness. I love that. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. For God who said, shine, or light shall shine out of darkness, is the one who shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. I mean, you can go on and on, but it just goes on. And I mean, every little one of these verses, a lot of them are in John, just goes on to just talk about how we God is the light, Jesus is the light, and we need to follow the light. And there is a proverb about darkness I need to find, maybe. We'll keep talking.
And I firmly believe the closer you get to God, the more the evil one works to push you away. And so I think the devil loves that, oh, you stood in front of the congregation? Watch this. Yes. You're going to be drinking again in 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I hid that. Like I felt like a hypocrite. Like I wasn't willing to go back to my small group and be like, hey, you know, I started drinking again and I'm a bum again. And I wasn't willing to do that. And the DWI forced that back into the light. You know, it's like I couldn't hide it anymore. There's a breathalyzer in the car, right? I was like, all right, well, let's try this. And I share that with, you know, my daughter Addison. She loves God so much. And I just see her under attack all the time. So I'm just firmly believe that the closer... the closer you get to God, the more the devil's going to work.
I want to piggyback on that because I think so often as believers, we know all the resources we have. The problem is we don't know the schemes of the devil and we're not familiar with what he does. And so often that we need to be more aware of the flaming arrows that he's throwing at us, which is why we have to have the armor of God. And he is like the ruler of deceit. And he wants you to think that you're an idiot. You should, like you started off the conversation saying you did horrible things and you were shameful of doing drugs. And like Satan wanted you to live in that. And I don't think we do a good job of educating like our kids, our people, ourselves of like, oh, this is a Satan thing. This is Satan coming at me and these are his schemes. And I know I've got resources. But when you're focused on the resources, sometimes you don't understand, wait, what is happening? Which resource do I need? I might need a resource that is like, I got to put up the breastplate of righteousness or the helmet of salvation, whatever that is. But knowing that we have access to that because we have to know what schemes are coming at us.
Yeah.
And what it means in a practical way. What does it mean to do that day to day? And I think that is, I know for me, I've struggled with that too. Okay, so we were talking about the church, though, being one of those resources. So for you, the church was a big part of that, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But is there something looking back you feel like the church is a resource did well and something back you're looking at going, this is something that we could have done better? Christy and I mean, we've been in ministry a while, and in ministry, you see a lot of hurting people.
Oh, yes.
And then you see a lot of people, you hear from a lot of people who have been hurt by people claiming to be and represent God's church.
Yes.
And so when you're trying to sit and navigate that language and what it means, it is hard, you know, in the moment. What are things you feel like were represented well by believers? What are things you feel like we could have done better at the time?
Yeah, that's
like
good.
If you're...
Well, I mean, I touched on it at the very beginning. So I knew my life had become unmanageable and we were seeking a place where we could get some help, like a community where we could get help. And one, we walked in the door and immediately God put somebody in front of us, the least likely person the church would pick to welcome somebody in the door, mind you, put somebody in front of us and been like, you belong here. Connected us to, you know, the Monday, you know, when it was Wednesday mornings at 6 a.m. group of men where I could just be like, I could be myself. And these are the things I'm struggling with. And like, hey, you're in the right place.
So those were flawed believers listening to a prompting from the Lord to look at you and respond. Right?
Flawed
believer.
So in other words, we're all flawed.
I'm going to write that one down. Flawed. We're believers. All flawed. Not just them. I'm
but
flawed too.
I'm saying.
You're not flawed.
I didn't walk in at 6 a.m., but I'm still flawed.
But I'm saying that ones, like we have to understand that we may think we're not equipped to get here and look at John Rosenbaum and say, I may not have gone through your struggle, but I can be here for you and on the church. Rick Murphy, obviously was not a pastor.
No.
He was not a minister.
No.
He was not a CR coordinator.
No.
He just saw someone and he goes, you need to go here.
Yeah.
And you know that was a prompting of the Lord.
Yes.
Saying, you need to do this.
It had
right?
to be. He wasn't okay. part of some serve team whose yeah, job it was no. to welcome people.
He didn't look great. You know, he didn't look good on paper. I mean.
That's good.
You know.
I think that's what we don't do well is the other side of that coin.
Okay.
Which,
explain that. That's great.
Hey, you need to make sure you have it all together when you're coming to church. You need to, you know, we're here to learn about the Bible and, you know, make sure we're doing everything right. Like people, we can give off that feeling sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
I would say all the time.
I know there's people who've come into our small group and like eyes raised and left because it was like, oh, they're talking about abuse, addiction, divorce. I think that's one. I think the other part that we don't get well is you touched on it, which is talking about we're under attack. I don't believe we talk about being spiritual attack enough where we can talk about there's a supernatural evil that's trying to keep you away from God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not part of our, we don't spend a lot of time talking about that. And I think it gives the devil a foothold.
Yeah.
Because we're now blind to it. And even when we start talking about it, people are kind of like, well, that feels like, can we talk about the knowledge of the Bible and not this Holy Spirit stuff?
Right.
And so
spiritual warfare.
Yeah. I believe that's a huge, I believe that is the most untapped subject that could give this Big C Church so much power.
Totally.
If we would get out of our heads and trying to learn about the Hebrew definition of something and get into talking about, no, we're under attack.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that when you do an Old Testament study of the word advocate or Satan, it's actually not even, they don't refer to it's not even referenced like as a person. So there's no reference of the devil as like a pronoun or a person, but it's what the devil does. It's the schemes, it's the manipulation, it's the deceit. It's all the, what Ephesians talks about, just the schemes of the devil.
Yeah.
And I found that mind-blowing because it wasn't until like the second century church where we actually put it as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, wait, it is a person, but it's stronger when it's all the things that this person does and how he implores all of the supernatural angels and the evil and all the things around it.
Yeah, I love like the screw tape letters of like all the different ways trying to get that believer.
I will, if you have not read the screw tape letters, people, we'll just push that book right now on this podcast.
C.S. Lewis.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good one. So what about now? Where do you feel like you are now and how are you and Kristen doing and the kids and like,
yeah, we got four teenagers.
It's a wild ride.
Where Chris and I are right now, I think I just remember laying in bed next to her just recently on a Saturday morning, just being like, I am so happy for our marriage and where we are. We have friends and other couples and things like that are struggling. And it's not that we're impervious to struggle. We've kind of been through some struggles. And right now we're at a place where we can love and support and help others. For me, I remember, 2021, Chris Hurt calling and being like, hey, your kids are coming into sixth grade. Will you help with Blue? And I was like, I got a DWI. Is that okay? He's like, are you still struggling with alcohol? I was like, no. And he's like, come on, it'll be great. You're going to love it. You know, just getting kind of involved with, I found Jesus in youth group. That foundation led to a place where decades later, I was like, I'm struggling. So where did I turn? Turn to a Bible study. Mm-hmm. And so just the chance to kind of give that back and try to help other kids. But we're Kristen and I are just trying to figure it out. Teenagers are hard.
Yeah.
Love you kids, but they're going through real adult struggles.
Yeah.
And
that's what's hard, right? Is so much has moved down to an age that really, are they able to cope with that?
Yeah.
Like being able to stand in front of your kids gets harder and harder because there's stuff that just infiltrates the family.
Yeah.
So and it's hard as parents to stop what's coming at them because the kids are like, you're making me miss out.
Yeah.
Like you don't need this. You don't need that. You don't. And it's, and that's our job. And that's what makes, for me, I'm just speaking for me.
Yeah.
It makes it hard being like the mean mom. I'm wearing the vest, and I'm committed to it, and it's hard.
and yes, I had my struggles, and I'm not a perfect parent, but we've gotten our kids plugged in here at church, and we, you know, try to raise them in a way that they'll be grow closer to God and avoid a lot of the pitfalls. But I mean, they'll have their own stories to tell on this podcast one day. They're not. The devil is attacking them too, getting to them through the internet, getting to them through, you know, friends who don't love Jesus. I mean,
and sometimes that does mean they're going to be mad at you.
Oh gosh,
and it's horrible. And I'm feeling empathy for that because it's my kids now are in college or Joel just graduated. Sure. I feel like it's getting harder and harder. Yeah. So I'm seeing these kiddos coming up now that. The village kind of has disappeared in some ways.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the church needs to be more of that. Like Big C Church, again, as believers, just helping our kiddos with so much, like you're saying, coming at them. But also with just their ability to endure. A lot of us have a hard time going back and forth and talking about the difference between how you feel now versus what the reality of your situation is.
Yep.
And so that leads to a lot of, unfortunately, in kiddos, substance abuse and
self-harm
and pornography addiction and sex and gaming, even addictions, other things that keeps us from having substantial relationships because relationships are hard.
Yeah.
And having that emotional endurance becomes difficult. And so then if you're entering into this saying, I need to parent, that means my kids aren't going to like me all the time. If you're in a phase where that is going on every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is hard.
I'll take that and kind of take it down a slightly different path. A dad's point of view. I am passionate that it's really hard for men to have good, deep relationships with other men, right? And so we end up, we being
isolated,
men or dads, isolated and struggling here. And so if your kids aren't giving it back to you in a way that makes you feel good about yourself, if your spouse isn't giving it back to you in a way you feel good about yourself, and you don't have a support network of other men that you can kind of lean on, maybe go deeper than just sports or hunting, and get down a little bit deeper, then you're alone and by yourself, and the devil is going to have so much fun with that. There's a small group of men that I remember growing up, my granddad used to go every once a week to the Holiday Inn and read the newspaper with a group of guys. On this sort of second round of sobriety, that was one of the things that I really wanted to do, is like find a group of men that we could get together.
Friendship. Yeah.
So I think it's 4 years. We've only missed one Friday. There's a group of 3 to 5 guys. We get together for breakfast every Friday morning at the depot. And there's guys who've gone through job loss, guys who've gone through divorce. Yeah.
Let's go to this Bible verse. Ephesians 6, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. Stand therefore, having fastened on the belt of truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and on the shoes for your feet, having put on the readiness given by the gospel of peace. In all circumstances, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish, I love this, all the flaming darts, I want to cry, all the flaming darts of the evil one, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying at all the times in the Spirit, with all prayer and that supplication. To the end, keep alert with all perseverance, making supplication for all the saints, and also for me, that words may be given to me in opening my mouth boldly to proclaim the mystery of the gospel. I love this because it's all. And then you do have to kind of have a fortitude, but that's what the Holy Spirit's there.
Yeah.
To be like, don't back down.
Yep.
Don't back, stand in it. You can do it. I'm going to hold you up, girl. I'm going to hold you up.
Sometimes we're that for our kids when they can't be that for themselves.
100% we are.
And then that's where, like, you got to put that
on. That's called elementary and middle school.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to put that on and stand in front of them and be able to rely on God then for that fortitude, because your kids aren't going to give it to you. They're not going to give you the feedback you want.
Exactly right.
And you talk about the village not being there. You know, where two or more gather in my name, I'm there.
Yes.
Like, we we yeah. sometimes feel like we got to go at this stuff alone. Like, I don't know if it's an American independence thing. It's like, here, I'm going to go.
Frisco.
I'm going to solve this problem.
All of it, all the above.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, no, like we, the Big C Church,
that's
it. You should be able to go through this. Like, if you're struggling in your marriage, if you're struggling with addiction, if your kids are going through something, you mm-hmm. need somebody and a group of people that you can share this with.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean they're going to fix it for you, but sharing it and praying about it automatically pushes the devil to the side.
That's right. And you don't need a minister of a church to be in that group.
No.
You just need like-minded believers that you know are Bible believers, spirit-filled believers that can sit there. And again, like you said, don't come in and fix it.
Yeah.
Just gird up your prayer warriors.
Yep.
So that's all we're doing. This is going to be my prayer warrior. This is going to be my army. Just be my army, and we're not going to fix it because God's going to do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So good.
So good. I feel like we should end right now.
I know.
We could talk more.
I think so. We could go on forever. This has been a great conversation. Appreciate it so much, John. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You were so easy to talk to. You shared your story so well.
There's a lot.
Well, so let's just end it with this, though. But if somebody is struggling, can they reach out to you?
Yes. Yeah.
So they can.
I can't fix them.
That's right.
Happy to talk to them. Happy to share what's worked for me.
So if they don't want to go through us because they might want anonymity, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah,
I can. Directly or
My personal email and my cell phone are fine.
Could you do it right now?
Mm-hmm.
On the microphone?
Yep.
You need to look it up?
No, it's John, J-O-H-N, at like the at sign, therosies.net. So therosies.net.
Thank you.
It's not easy like gmail.com. It's not. John at therosies.net.
I don't see many .net anymore.
Yeah. That's very 1990.
That's fine.
But that's great. And
John at therosies.net. If you would like to reach out to John, then he will read his email and he can respond to you.
I will read it at least once a week, I promise. And and Celebrate Recovery on Thursday nights here at the church is awesome.
A good entry point for sure.
Yeah.
Right?
Just show up. I'll go with anybody who emails me.
Oh, that's good. People always need partners.
Yeah.
I go to Al-Anon with a lot of different ladies because they're like, will you go? Yes.
Yeah.
I love Al-Anon. Let's go. Fun.
So good. Okay. Well, thank you so much, John.
Mm-hmm.
We really appreciate it. We appreciate the conversation.
My pleasure.
I know somebody's going to be blessed by listening to this for sure.
I'm excited for all these people to hear it.
Somebody is going to need to hear what you just said and respond to that.
Great.
And if you need to respond and you're listening to this right now, don't hold back. Do it. As soon as you're done listening, do it right now.
That's right.
So, okay. That is all from us today. That's it from Noisy Narratives. Until next week, everybody, this is Noisy Narratives out.
Bye.